Blog Talk Radio.
Radio and the Cosmic Citizen with, I'm your host, Paula Thompson, and with me is my dear friend and co-host, Crystalline Beek Larson. Hi, Crystalline.
Hi, Paula. How are you doing today?
Good. Well, today we have a kind of a happy, sad day because,
bittersweet.
Bittersweet. Milestones are always that way, it seems. You know, it's the end of one thing and the beginning of another, and it's the end of an era in our movement, our Urantia movement, because we lost one of our heroes just last week, Dr. Meredith Justin Spronger. And Meredith was so important to so many of us and so instrumental in spreading the word of the Urantia book and its teachings and living its teachings. If anybody ever lived its teachings, it was Meredith Spronger. And he had an amazing and distinguished career. He was a college president, professor, an executive administrator, a licensed psychologist and therapist, an ordained minister. He served in congregations in the Midwest, taught at Elmhurst College, the Indiana Institute of Technology. He functioned as the head of the Department of Psychology, chairman of the Division of Liberal Arts, as well as the president. He was the last living colleague of Dr. Sadler, so he knew Sadler well. He was a devoted scholar and really an amazing scholar. And so I'm real pleased to tell you that our first guest today is on with us. I'm Larry Mullins. Hi, Larry. How you doing?
Hi, how are you?
Good. Larry.
Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
You collaborated so much with Dr. Spronger on so many different projects, and notably A History of the Urantia Papers, which the two of you wrote together. So I couldn't think of anybody better to start out this tribute to Meredith Spronger than you, and I'm so glad you were able to give us some of your time this morning.
I appreciate that. That really was the great project with Meredith. We did many, many things together, but that was the most important. When Joan suggested a history, there was only one guy I could think of that could really be the foundation that made sense for it, and that was Meredith. And he was very, very willing to help.
Yeah, he was.
When was that you first started working on that project with him?
Well, it was back in the 90s. It was. We worked on it about 3 years, and we realized. Well, in fact, I realized I got him first, and then I realized that we would need other Urantians. So we cherry picked some really good ones. with experience, including David Cantor and many others, that, so that we could have people, you know, like, Urantians are like herding cats, as you know, but we did manage to get a pretty good profile of Urantians that would agree that when they saw the facts, they agreed that this is the way it was, and that the history would be verified by that input, by that group wisdom. But you were talking about Meredith meeting Dr. Saddle, and that was actually when I did the history. It was fascinating to have Meredith talk about it. If you go back to those early years, it was right after the Urantia book was first published that Meredith went to with 11 different ministers, and they went to Chicago to verify who was this Dr. Saddle and where did this book actually come from. So when he went there and he met with Dr. Saddle, these were two extraordinary heavyweights, and they immediately resonated and developed a fascinating relationship. And as you said, they were colleagues. How often would you find a minister and a psychologist and a minister and a psychiatrist, and with all the other talents that they both had, that would collaborate on getting the Urantia book out to the world?
So true.
And kind of what a couple of real power hitters.
Yeah, it's real neat. And then Meredith, too, it's interesting that when you think about it, that he actually was able to work with the foundation, with the fellowship, with all kinds of people, and never got really crystallized as being in one side or the other. He was always on the side of truth. We always looked to him. He was like a beacon of light. And it's certainly really, really a great loss for the movement. And as I say, you'll never see his like again. There's nobody to take his place.
No, not even close, really. I mean, and the fact that he was such a pioneer, one thing that I just absolutely admire so much about Meredith Sprunger was back at a time when certainly America was in the throes of traditional conservatism, he was an absolutely courageous human being. Not only did he openly admit that he embraced these teachings and loved them and read them and believed in them with all of his heart, he shared them with everybody, just courageously shared them with colleagues and with, he sent books to people, turned so many people on to the Urantia book. And he had such a quality of credibility about him. Everybody loved him. I love that you say that, he seemed to cross all boundaries, and I think it was because everyone respected him so much.
That's true. Actually, I met him back in about the mid-70s. And, back then, as you recall, it was pretty secretive. The movement was very closed, very secretive. There were people that had special information. It was very different, and it was just so weird. And I met him. I remember he was sitting at a cafeteria table at one of the conferences, and I sat down with him, and I started asking him questions. And I was very much interested in the origin of the book. And I was astonished. This guy was open. He would tell you anything. He didn't mind, what do you want to know? I'll tell you what I do know. And it was so different than anything else I've ever experienced.
Well, that's true. You couldn't, there was a time when you couldn't get anybody to talk about anything.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of the history, especially the history and the origins of the Urantia book, and I can just see Meredith going into Saddler's office and sitting down and getting him to open up and talk about these things. I've never heard of anybody else who was able to get Saddle to open up and talk about the things of the way Meredith was.
Well, actually, there were. I mean, people. He did talk to quite a few people, more than he should. And Lena often said he spilled the beans too often. But he was his own man, and that's Meredith was unique in so many ways that he was open about things. Actually, you know, it was interesting because Clyde Bedell told me way back when I first got the book, he told me that Dr. Sadler had written a book called Mind at Mischief and had put a note in there about the sleeping subject. And that really interested me. And he said, but he took it out in subsequent editions. Evidently, the midwares told him to take it out. That was in 1929 that he did that. And that was quite fascinating to me. And I had never seen the book. And I knew had known Berkeley for, God, about 5 years. And, you know, she was, again, she kept a lot of that stuff to herself that she knew. And I was in her library looking at books, and I picked up Mind at Mischief and found that appendix and where he talked about the sleeping subject. And literally, the hair on my back of my neck went up because we knew nothing about that stuff. No one was talking about it until Sherman's book back then, too, came out, How to Know What to Believe.
Oh, yeah.
Which was a very flawed book. He wrote it, I think, without referring to his notes or anything. But that's all we knew about. And he gave the whole story of what Sadler had told him about how the book was materialized.
So many things have come out about that. And, and that's, of course, another whole show. The history of the Urantia Papers is another whole show. But I think it's fascinating that Meredith was so willing to and so open to talking about it, and when others weren't, others obviously weren't, and there were so many of us coming into the movement at that time when we were all so curious, and it was refreshing to have
Bill somebody. Bill Sadler was open too, but he didn't live long enough to really. He died in 63, the same day John Kennedy died. It was only 8 years after the book was published that Bill died. So, and
he died the same day.
Same day John Kennedy died.
Wow, that's something I didn't know.
But Bill was very open about certain things. And what we did with the history was we really made a composite of everything we could gather and collect about this that had been published and things. And Meredith was the sounding board. He was the touchstone that we used to verify, yay or nay, is this plausible or not? And that's how we piece together what we believe is the materialization. The reason we did that is the midwares had said that the method of materialization would never be revealed. And that's quite true. And I can say, nobody knows how it was done. No one saw it. However, Bill speculated pretty strongly about it, and Dr. Sadler did to Meredith. And so we put together something because after so many false ideas started emerging, because once it was out, then all these people started making up stuff, and the weirder the better. Now, the key that Meredith... I came back to over and over again, though, was, look, it doesn't matter how the book came to be. It's the content of the book itself that should determine whether you believe it or not. The example he gave was, suppose you were taken to a room and you saw a guy floating in the air and these pages were coming out of his mouth, and you said, well, this is miraculous, so I believe it. And he said, that's the worst reason to believe anything, that you think it was miraculous. It's better to use your mind and scrutinize the content of the book and weigh it against your common sense and best judgment and see if it fits you or not.
Boy, indeed. That is, boy, is that sound advice, too.
I was really lucky in that,
my father met Meredith in the very early 60s when he was doing deputation work at one of Meredith's churches when he was home on furlough from his medical mission work in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And he got talking about theology, as he frequently did, but instead of getting argumentative and defensive, as most ministers did with my dad's questions or concerns, he was really supportive of some of the questions my dad had. And one of the things that was a real sticking point, other than the atonement doctrine, was also the concept of the Trinity. And Meredith brought the Urantia book down off the shelf at about 1 o'clock in the morning and handed it to me. He says, I think this is going to answer all of your questions about these theological issues. He said, it's answered every challenge I've had. And he came right out and told my dad about his meeting with Sadler and the whole story of the history that as he knew it. And so when we were introduced to the book as kids, we were told the story that Meredith knew.
Mm-hmm. That's it.
And so I never went through that phase of wondering, you know, what the origins were, because it was enough. And it wasn't that it told the whole story, and it wasn't that there weren't mysteries involved. It was just that there was enough information to, you know, quell those kinds of doubts and questions that came up for so many people about how this came about.
Mm-hmm. That's good. Well, you know, he could be feisty, too, at times. I remember once he was being interviewed, and I won't give the guy's name because he's still around. He's so popular. But he was sort of having a debate with Meredith in front of a large group of people. And he was taking the position against Meredith that Meredith's efforts at outreach were too aggressive and that he had really shouldn't be doing that. But he was also couching his words and magnanimously like, well, Meredith has his way of doing things. We understand that. However, this is our position, and we think we have to, slow growth is really the best way, and da, da, da. And I think that kind of annoyed Meredith, because he came back with this, well, you know, I had to make a decision, and I decided whether I should do what, and I'll leave his name out, what blank wants me to do, or do what God wants me to do. And I decided I'd do what God wants me to do.
Bravo. A man after my own heart. Or perhaps I'm a woman after his heart. I can't tell for sure, but to me, that is so important, to follow your highest calling.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, and one of the reasons why I admire him so much is because he was the person who brought with him this concept of, we can have a spiritual movement, and we can be religious. And, you know, he really stood up against some of the quirkiness, I think, in our movement, that our fear of being churchified. We've actually coined a word, churchification.
Yeah.
Churchification, yeah.
And Meredith flew right in the face of that stuff, and that was,
and rightly
was.
So, because I the thing that people don't understand about Revelation is not a religion. I don't want to start a religion, but what it does is unifies science, religion, and philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
And worship is an extremely important part of that. That's values and religion are utterly important. And there were a lot of mostly male, I think, left-brainers in the fellowship that fought hard against the idea of any kind of worship before a conference or prayer or anything like that. And which was pretty sad. And of course, Meredith, too, is grounded in philosophy. So the unification of science and religion through philosophy was what the Urantia book attempts to do. And he he tried to explain that, tried to forward that idea, but I don't think we've quite got it yet.
No, and he did more than just talk about the Urantia book and share his philosophies. He really was someone, in my opinion, who really lived the teachings as he believed them. Mm-hmm. He was, you know, he walked the talk. And
that's
my experience with him personally was that whenever I really needed ministerial advice or mentorship, he would be the person that I would call, even when I was quite young. And he always made time for me, no matter what was going on. He kept in touch with our whole family, you know, like we were part of his intimate family circle.
Oh, that's good, yeah.
And
well,
when
know,
my,
go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, when my parents' marriage was falling apart, Meredith was one of the people that they went to. He was the person they went to for spiritual advice. And my mother said that she was really surprised at the time that he didn't try to coerce them or talk them into staying together. And he just listened and he just offered, you know, a shoulder and an ear, understanding ear. But he was the only minister that they spoke to who didn't try to direct them, who really respected their free will in these decisions. And she said years later she was really grateful to him for that.
Yeah, that's right.
Because at the time she couldn't see the wisdom in that, but, you know, in retrospect she felt that that was really a gift.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, another interesting thing about Meredith was during all the turmoil that went on in the movement, off and on, you know, the lawsuits, the World War III thing, and Berkeley would always call on Meredith to come to Oklahoma and talk to the people. Well, what is World War III true? What's going to happen? What's really happening? And his wisdom was so refreshing and so reassuring.
Right.
And his stability and spiritual groundedness was so evident that you felt more comfortable. You didn't feel this fear overcoming you. Since you
he was
were
so
in
sound and reasonable.
Mm-hmm.
He could talk you down, in other words.
You know, it's an interesting thing, too, about Meredith. A lot of people don't know this. He mentions this on, by the way, on the Fellowship website, there's a lot of stuff about Meredith that is good, very valuable. But he mentions in there in his bio that he wrote, autobiography, that he had some extraordinary spiritual experiences, but they must stay personal. And and of course they have stayed personal. He never mentioned them to me. But I found that very, very interesting.
That is very interesting, but and not surprising.
Not
surprising at all. Because
the people that have these experiences rarely mention them, and if they do, it's to someone who they know quite well and trust totally that they would talk about them.
Don't you think that's the earmark of a genuine spiritual experience? People who just share that with everybody, it's probably more about affectation than it is about, you know, being genuinely.
I'm sure that's true, and I'm sure it's true of all the people we know. I know Joan has knocked me out with some stories that she's told of her experiences, and I've never heard anything like them. I've never really, you know, I can't really say I've had any transcendental spiritual experience other than a peak experience now and then, what everybody has.
Mm-hmm.
But I really believe that the story about my daughter's death and meeting the doctor 12 years later who tried to save her life was obviously had to have the angels had to pull that one off.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, and anybody who's heard that story, I think, and you know, we know how the angels work, so we know that they're good at bringing people together in circumstances in just the most perfect timing to make things happen well. And that's one of their main fortes. And, hey, listen, Larry and Krislyn, we have another caller. Do you mind if I put this person on as well?
No,
oh, please.
Okay, great. Area code 303. Excuse me, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen. Hello? 303?
You sure that's not me?
No, because you're 1708, right? And this is 9345.
Oh, Paula, that's me.
Oh, hi.
Hi. I didn't know. I didn't think I had pushed one. I've been listening. I couldn't get it to come up on my computer for some reason.
Oh, okay. Well,
but
hello,
anyway,
Joan.
I'm thrilled that you're doing this memorial for Meredith Spooner, because he truly is, I think, one of our foremost Urantia spiritual leaders. And I've always been so grateful for his friendship and leadership.
Oh, without
a doubt. I don't know if Christy already shared with you how we came to get the Urantia book initially via Meredith Spooner.
I did,
yes. Yes, she did. And actually said that he was a personal ministry to your family in many ways over the years.
Uh-huh. And so we wouldn't have found the Urantia book, well, when we did, had it not been for Meredith Spooner. Mm. And it was delightful for me when I spent a year for graduate study in Seattle at the time they were establishing their society. And Meredith, knowing that I lived in Wisconsin with my family, he and his wife were shocked to see me there and said, "Joan Beek, what are you doing here in Seattle?" And so I was a part of the establishment of their new society there. And anyway, his writings and the talks that he's given at so many conferences have always been, you know, one of the real highlights. So I'm sure we all look forward to the time when we will meet him again on the Mansion World and see
and
how
our
he...
loss is their gain.
Yes, isn't that so
he
true?
He must have a lot of people just really excited to welcome him to the Mansion Worlds this week.
Oh,
including his beautiful wife, Irene.
And,
uh-huh.
And let's imagine for a moment, because we know, and Larry, you probably know this better than anybody because you've worked it with him in the last 10, 15 years. We saw him get older, and we saw him lose his hearing and lose a lot of his faculties, and he was such a brilliant man. So, you know, to imagine that it's all new for him. It's all new, and he has, you know, everything works perfectly. And, wow, isn't that a wonderful thing to think about?
Yeah, we all have to face that. But, you know,
yeah.
It's interesting. I watched a video of Frank Lloyd Wright, and he was asked about his age. He was pretty old at the time, and he made this comment. He said, you know, you can't do anything about age. It just happens, but youth you can have. If you can have youth all your life if you decide to have it. And I really believe Meredith, in a sense, truly did that.
Yes.
Yeah, well, I agree.
Such a keen mind.
Well, I'm going to have to go, but I do appreciate the opportunity. Joan, nice to hear your voice, Paula and Krislyn.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Same here.
Yeah. Well, you guys have a great one, and I appreciate the opportunity to talk about Meredith.
And our love to your Joan, too.
Oh, you bet. That's I hit the lottery on that one. We'll be married 21 years this year.
Oh, my
God.
Really?
Congratulations.
Oh, wow.
That's wonderful.
Yes,
well, you guys,
give her our love.
Yeah.
I will do that.
Okay, Larry. Thanks for calling.
You betcha. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And
we have another caller.
Shared that bit about how Meredith found the Urantia book. I think Christy mentioned that last.
Yes, Saskia has asked us to read that on the air and also to read a posting from her personally, because she and Matthew just arrived back in Holland and they're suffering from jet lag, and
another great
collaborator. She couldn't call in.
Another great collaborator with Meredith is Saskia.
Right.
But we do have another caller right now. So let's
after we take
call.
The caller, then
yeah,
maybe I'll read her comments.
And Joan, I invite you to stay on with us. Area code 925, you're with us on the Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, it's Stephen Zant calling.
Hi, Stephen.
Hi, Stephen. Welcome.
Yes.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much for joining us today.
Sure. What I wanted to say about dear Meredith and dear Irene as well
mm-hmm.
is that they, all the years that I knew them and mostly encountered them at conferences, they were truly joyful people.
Mm.
I just can't remember any other religionists that I knew in the past 40 years who just embodied a kind of personal countenance of joy the way those two did. I even have photographs of Irene with a great big grin on her face and Meredith with a huge smile all the way across his face, and they both give me such joy to look at.
Oh, and you know, the two of them were such, so devoted to one another. How long were they married? 60 years or something? It's
wow.
just amazing amount of time. And they were so devoted to each other, and she was just always by his side, you know, just so
That's right.
supportive
That's right.
and amazing. A traditional kind of marriage in the best sense, you know.
Yeah, I got a big laugh out of B. Mulganis once. We were talking about the early days of the Urantia movement, and she said, you know, when I first started coming to conferences, I thought all those people were Presbyterians. They were all dressed in ties and suits. And she said, I thought, oh, my gosh, what will it take to loosen these people up?
Oh, that's priceless. Oh, well,
that's funny.
Know. Yeah, and
I remember him saying once that his mom taught him to tie a tie at I think like the age of 7, and he had never taken one off since. I'm
that's
assuming
right.
he was saying in jest, but yeah.
That's probably how it felt, though.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that gave both Meredith and Irene that kind of inner joy that just burst forth from them was that they had such a genuine sense of religion and its benefits to them that they just weren't troubled with doubt.
Exactly.
No, that is such a wonderful point. You know, Meredith was always positive, even through some of the hard, and Larry mentioned, you know, some of the hard things that our movement has gone through, probably not unlike any burgeoning religious movement or spiritual movement goes through. But Meredith was always a voice of reason and wisdom, and oftentimes people would turn to him and say, Meredith, you know, what do you think about this? And will you come and speak to us on this? Or, you know, your wisdom would be so much appreciated here. And, you know, another thing a lot of people don't realize is that back in the 80s, Mo Siegel and Meredith Sprunger started the Jesusonian Foundation together. And they did it because Meredith was always a stalwart outreacher and evangelist for the book. And they decided that it would be great to have materials to hand out to people, to give them. And together they wrote the Life After Death magazine, which is still a perennial favorite. People order
Isn't
it from
it?
The fellowship all the time. They
yeah,
still
it's a beautiful
order it.
Thing.
Yeah. And the full color introduction the two of them did together was wonderful, and all of the brochures that you know Meredith wrote to hand out
Those
to Christians
wonderful pamphlets.
Yes, indeed.
And he was a prolific writer, a very good writer.
Well, you know, he's also the man who first introduced Vern Benham Grimsley to the Urantia book.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yep.
And Vern then in turn introduced it to Richard Keeler and Hoyt, his fraternity brothers, is that correct?
That's right. That's right. David Gray tells us that he used to leave it sitting on the coffee table in their fraternity house.
A great conversation starter.
What in the world is that?
Yeah, what in the world is that?
Well, listen, yes. I just wanted to check in for a minute and say hi to you guys. I'm glad you're doing this. Meredith deserves all the honors we can heap on him.
I couldn't agree more.
Okay. Bless you all.
Here.
See you later.
Bless you.
Bye.
Thanks, Stephen.
Well, it's so great when people call with these reminiscences of Meredith, and that's what this show is all about, folks. So please, please do give us a call. Tell us what you remember about Meredith. This is your time to share. It's a tribute to him. And the call-in number is 646-716-8158. I find it ironic that just a couple months ago we did a tribute to Vern Benham Grimsley, and now we're doing a tribute to one of his mentors, Meredith J. Sprunger. And Meredith was 97 years old. He lived a long and good life and an absolutely amazing life, fruitful in so many ways.
I think it's also quite ironic that he lived 47 minutes after the close of his 97th birthday.
Yeah, isn't that interesting? That is. Well, and we have another caller, so let's keep taking calls. I want to get as many people on as want to come on and share their remembrances of Meredith. Area code 434, sorry. You're with us on the air.
Hello. Oh, this is Dick Bain.
Hi, Dick.
Hi, Dick.
Hello.
Well, first of all, before you get started on sharing with us, I wanted to offer you our condolences. I understand your mother passed away this week, so
yeah.
We send you our love and comfort and well wishes for your family.
Well, thank you.
You lost two of your best friends this week on this planet, huh?
Well, two people who were very important in my life, that's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I know how important, and you've shared with me how important Meredith Sprunger was to you in your life, and that you guys worked together closely on the spiritual fellowship. So what would you like to tell us about your relationship with Meredith and how much he meant to you?
Okay. Is this Crystalline?
No, this is Paula.
Oh,
and this
Paula.
Is Crystalline. This is Crystalline.
Oh, yeah. I thought I heard Crystalline as well. I could talk about, I'm losing my voice, talk about the early days. It was about 47 years ago when I met him. I was, had gone back to college. It had been Indiana Technical College. I don't know if he was there at the time, the first time I was there, but it became Indiana Institute of Technology. And he was the head of the liberal arts department.
Wow.
And he taught a number of liberal arts courses. I had three courses from him, and one of them was philosophy, and that's when he had a section of that course that was philosophy of religion, and he made an assignment from these big blue books that were salted into the college library. So I picked one up and had a look at it and said, oh, really, this is really neat. Being a great science fiction fan, I wasn't sure that it wasn't science fiction at the point, but... You know, and being an engineering kind of student person, I'm sort of a logical mind. But after I got into reading it, I said, there's something to this. And I spent one summer reading it. And then I saw him in the fall, and I said, this is a very interesting book. And he said, we have a study group. And I said, great. So I went to the study group, and he sold me my first Urantia book. And I was there for 5 years I had to change jobs, and he and Irene were very gracious people. And Meredith has always been a very humble person, despite all his education and his abilities. Somebody's just a real pleasure to know and to work with. And by the way, I noticed Saskia just released some of his condensed versions of the Ranch Book. We use those in our study group for, part of the 5 years that I was in the study group.
Yes, and they re-edited his abridged version of the Urantia book and put it on Kindle, made it available for iPads and Kindle.
Right, that's great. And then later, my main contact with him, I guess, was writing occasional articles for the Spiritual Fellowship Journal. After the, I can't remember that really starting before. There was a predecessor organization that was like the Christian Fellowship for Students of the Urantia Book that he organized. And then in about 2002 or 2001, he and Sherilyn Henry organized the Spiritual Fellowship.
Right.
And subsequently, about 2002, they had a conference out in Boulder. Quite a few of the well-known people in the Urantia community were at that conference and the meeting before the international conference out there, and maybe it was in 2005. Anyway, it was at Boulder, and Meredith was ordained as the first spiritual fellowship minister at that meeting during that time, and he invited me to be on the board of directors, and I accepted of the spiritual fellowship, and been doing that ever since until we dissolved the corporation last year. And I've great privilege to work with Meredith. I'm sorry that the Spiritual Fellowship didn't take off and fly as he had hoped, but it was his dream, and we were all working towards that end. But I'm hoping that the foundations that were laid and the work that was done, the documents that we forged as a group, that will be useful to someone someday.
Can you share a little bit of what Meredith's dream was in founding the Spiritual Fellowship?
Yeah, it's kind of, if you went to, matter of fact, we there is a website that has some of these thoughts on it, thespiritualfellowship.org, and I'm maintaining that website that's kind of as an archive. And I'll probably put a tribute to Meredith on there. Maybe I can get a few other folks to do that as well. I lost the question. What was the question again?
It was what was his dream? I mean, we know that it was a speak up if you can, because
His dream, I think, was twofold. It's expressed in what's written on the website. One of them is to be able to try and bring the Urantia book to everyone, to the whole world, in very broad terms, but also to establish a religious organization whose purpose was to spread the teachings of the Urantia book, but also to enable, encourage people to form fellowships that would be formally affiliated with the Spiritual Fellowship. And it had somewhat of a churchy flavor, I guess, because, we had two ministers on the board of directors. And there was a membership manual that came out for groups and for individuals. And then there was a annual on ministry for various levels of ministry within the organization. So, but I think he had hoped that these fellowships would form and they would get together for worship and for service, somewhat of a church-flavored kind of a thing. But the service certainly is what the Urantia book wants us to do and says it's one of the most important things that we can do is service to other people. And that was going to be a big part of these fellowships, hopefully.
Truly socialize our religious lives together. And the Urantia book goes into a lot of detail about the benefits of socialized
you know, religion or socializing, I should say, religion rather than, you know, that, and the detriments of institutionalizing it. But that's not what Meredith was hoping for. He was wanting to get to the benefits of socialized religion, so socializing around religion and, you know, glorifying the family life. And there's a whole list of beautiful things that that we can do together as religionists. And so...
Yes.
And I want to say, Krislyn, if you're still with us, honey, I'm getting a lot of background.
Hello?
So give me a call back, Krislyn, and we'll see if it's better. I know it's a little hard to hear, and you speak softly, too, Dick, so.
Oh, well, it's me. Yeah, my voice is not stentorian. Sorry. When I'm at church, they say, get closer to the microphone.
Get
when
closer.
When I'm facilitating, so.
So now have you been studying with Meredith this whole time?
No, I was there. I was in Fort Wayne for 5 years.
Oh, just for 5 years.
Just
right.
For 5 years,
okay.
And I was, you know, but that was kind of very important because that was my first exposure to the Urantia book, and Meredith was a great mentor. And I have to mention, you know, his wife was also a very gracious person, and she was on the board of directors as well until she passed away. I can't remember when it was, but there is a little tribute to her on the Spiritual Fellowship website.
Yeah, that was Irene passed away maybe 3 or 4 years ago, I think.
Yes.
Not that long ago.
Yes.
So, and can you give us the on-air, the website, web address, so that we can go and check it out, the Spiritual Fellowship website?
Okay, thespiritualfellowship.org.
Oh, good.
That will get
I'll post
you there.
I will post that on the chat board as well. thespiritualfellowship.org.
Uh-huh.
Okay,
and
great.
I'm hoping a few people that knew him real well will be willing to write a few tributes or some personal recollections that I could post on to that website.
Yeah, that would be wonderful.
And we do have the entire series of the Spiritual Fellowship Journal on there on the website, and there are a lot of Meredith's writing on there and a number of excellent writers have wrote things for that journal. So,
including Larry Mullins, right?
Yes, I'm sure. I think Larry's had some things on there too. He was he was editor for a while.
Right, he was.
Yes.
That's another way that in which he collaborated with Meredith. Meredith was a mover and shaker. There's just no, even and what was amazing was even as he got quite a bit older, so.
Well,
you know, he still stayed actively involved.
So became the chairman emeritus of the Spiritual Fellowship when he was
wonderful.
Sort of beginning to, you know, fail a little bit, and he was I think he was already 90 in his 90s. So,
wow.
But I wanted to say that Meredith was passionate about the Urantia book. He was not a Urantia book fundamentalist.
No.
I once heard that he had some doubts about Fandors.
Doubts about Fandors, huh?
Somebody asked him, do you still have some doubts about Fandors? And I'm hoping to put a few pictures of them, too, on there, too. That from my archives, I have a few.
Pictures of Meredith?
Yeah, Meredith. And
I was going to say, I don't think you have pictures of Fandors, do you?
No, but I have an article about Fandors that Paul Herrick, who was one of the pictures, shows myself and Meredith and Paul Herrick, who was an aeronautical engineer, and
right.
He did an analysis of Fandors and showed how big a wingspan they would have to carry two people using aeronautical engineering knowledge.
Imagine how big Adam and Eve had to have been. I mean, how much they had to have weighed to fill out an 8-foot frame.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was a big bird.
But he said it was feasible for the bird that big. And they found some bones for some birds that weren't quite that big, but, you know, indicating that there were a lot bigger birds than we have known about. So,
right.
Possible.
There was a gentleman from Hawaii who I've been in contact with over the years, who told a story about that. Excuse me. I got a bit of a scratchy throat today. But he talked about really doubting the veracity of the Fandors and then figuring out how big of a wingspan they would have to have and having decided what it would have to be. And the day after he decided that he would have to find some proof of birds of that size before he was willing to accept this, an article showed up in the newspaper that they had just uncovered the skeleton of a bird with a 25-foot wingspan.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said the timing of that was such that it put him over the brink and helped him decide to believe what he was reading in the Arantia book.
Well, just as long as you don't believe all the science.
Well, right.
I have written a lot of articles about that, and I think Meredith went along with the idea that, you know, some of the science is outdated, and the author said it's outdated, but the people insist it's all okay, and all right. If you need to believe that, okay.
You know what I like to tell people? The Arantia book never claimed to be a revelation of fact. It does, however, claim to be a revelation of truth. And sometimes the science or whatever is just a construct that they hang the truth on, and so you have to become adept at looking for the truth rather than the fact.
Well, I'd say it's a spiritual book, not a science book.
Right, exactly. So hang on with us here. I'm going to take another caller, if you guys don't mind. I want to get as many people on as I can.
Okay.
Area code 727, you're with us on The Cosmic Citizen.
Hey, this is Mike Bain.
Hi, Mike. This is your son, right?
Good morning, Mike.
Yeah, good morning. And now it's a good afternoon for us.
Yeah, it is.
I've been listening. I just picked up probably towards the end where my dad was talking about spiritual fellowship, and we flew up to Canada in 2001. No, I'm sorry, it was 2002 for a spiritual fellowship meeting up at Silver Springs, and that was Sue Tennant and her husband, and I forget their
Derek.
His name. Derek. Thank you. And we were newlyweds. My wife and I, and she never got into the book, but she was has always been very interested in the people, and she had never met Dr. Sprunger before, and she fell in love with him just right away. She thought he was the coolest thing, coolest person, and she really just really enjoyed being around him, and she was sad when she heard that he passed on, but she knows about our beliefs, and she took a lot of pictures, so I'm going to try and get some of the better pictures and share them. And Dad, I wanted to let you know I also found a slide of the Sprungers from 1968.
Oh, wow.
So if anyone's interested in that, I can get that transferred.
Scan it and I'll put it on the website.
Yeah, I'll get it. It's a nice picture of Dr. and Irene. Nice kind of candid picture, probably one that my mom took. She loved to take candid pictures of people.
It'd be great if you posted it on Facebook, too.
Yeah. Yeah,
yeah.
I'll do that.
And send it to me, too, Mike, because we want to do a segment in The Mighty Messenger, and we're looking for a high-resolution picture because it has to be in print. So if you can scan it at a high res and send it to me, that'd be great.
Cool. And I wrote the other day, I think I wrote it in Facebook, that I'm heavily indebted to Dr. Sprunger because he indirectly got me involved in the Arantia book, thanks to my dad. And if it weren't for him being so brave in his college courses and offering that book as an option, I guess I never would have found it, and it never would have changed my life and made me the person who I am today. I know I'm completely different than what I was because of the Arantia book. It continues to astound me every time I listen to the audio every day. So, just being there with Meredith in Canada, being there again when I was an adult, because I saw him when I was a little kid, but then being, you know, really into the Urantia book and then being there with him in the room is a completely different experience, and it's just pretty amazing to hear him speak and hear how enthusiastic he always was about the different subjects, and to hear his vision was just a wonderful thing. And then trying to put it into action was another was another challenge altogether. But to at least try and get something in motion was probably a good thing for him.
Oh yeah, and you and Crystalyn have that in common. You both ended up with the book indirectly because of the work of Meredith Sprunger.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, I'm a second generation student believer, and my father was introduced to the book by Meredith when I was about six. And I've told many people this story, but shortly after we returned to Africa, after that furlough where my dad met Meredith, my mom gave birth to a third baby, and it was really severely malformed. And she had had tuberculosis, and while she was pregnant, they were treating her with a medication that was later determined to cause severe birth defects. And so he only lived a few hours after he was born. And my brother and I both had, you know, real grief over that. And we were really anticipating a new baby in our family with great enthusiasm. And so our first questions about what death was all about, what that was and what happened after you die, and our very first questions about that were answers that were paraphrased for a 4 and 6 year old mind from the Urantia book. And my dad did such a great job of telling us about the whole universe adventure, and we were so excited about it. We wanted to get on our way right away. And my dad sort of had to hold us back and say, well, you know, there's nothing more important than the work of the world, of the sphere on which you are currently. And but it was a wonderful experience for both of us to grow up without ever being afraid of dying, without ever being afraid of death or of making mistakes or of ever garnering God's wrath. It was such a gift.
What a beautiful gift that is, to live fearlessly, to live this life fearlessly. And we have a caller, speaking of Canada, you guys, and I hope you can hang on here with us. I welcome you to stay
sure.
on as long as you like. We have our good friend, the Reverend, from Canada, who considers Dr. Sprunger one of his mentors. So I'm going to put him on right now. Hey, Rev, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Can you
Hi.
Hear me?
Yes.
Hello.
Hi, Crystalyn.
Hi.
Yes, I would just like to lend my voice to the triumphant memorial tribute that we're having for Meredith. But I believe that a better term would be a celebration of life.
Oh, yeah.
I think Meredith would be the first to agree. But don't weep for me. I'm on my way. I've graduated. I love Meredith. When we first came across the Urantia book, my wife and I, we joined a study group that was somewhat quirky, and as many are. But in any case, my wife was very, very suspicious about this book and this movement until we went to a conference and we met Meredith and John Hay and Christy, and I was in such a state of relief because these people were so normal. and Dr. Sprunger just took us right under his wing. And when a few years later, when I got the call to go into ministry, after I had talked to my own minister, Meredith was the first I called, and Mo Siegel, and just to talk to them about the fact that I'm a Urantia Book student going into seminary, and Meredith said, he said, you know, what we need to understand is that when the Urantia Book really catches here, the Urantia movement are going to need people with credentials. People are sane and straight and sober and can stand up and speak to this. And the best thing that you can do is to go and do that. And so he really gave me a great deal of support to go into the seminary. And all of the time that I was in the seminary, we were communicating on the phone and writing back and forth. And the most incredible thing happened this morning. I was just going through some of my reference materials for this other project that I'm working on, and I came across Meredith's note to me. He had sent me a little book that, at that time, he was developing a thing called the Christian Fellowship for the Students of the Urantia Book.
Right.
And he had a subset of that of ministers from the various denominations, and he sent a newsletter. And so he would send these to me every 3 or 4 months and a note. And I got this note, and I just saw it, and I just wanted to just read a little bit of it. It just says, Dear Roy, it was good to talk to you this morning. Here's the papers that you requested. Also enclosed are a few other things. There have been some revisions with these pamphlets, so I'm not sure what I'm sending you. Feel free to make copies. Glad to hear that things are going well with your theological religious training, and hope we can get together. Cordially, Meredith. And I went, oh my God, that's just so cosmic to find this at this particular day. So I knew I had to call in and just lend my voice to the tribute. What a wonderful man! And I'm certain that when the history of the Urantia movement are written, that Meredith will go down as our first minister, as our prime minister.
Oh.
He's
what a beautiful thought!
Wonderful
thought.
Support. Yeah.
Well, I promised Saskia too that I would share Meredith's story about finding the Urantia Book.
So, are you going to read that for us?
Would you mind?
No,
okay,
I wouldn't mind.
Okay, I'm going to just listen to it then. Thanks, Paula.
Okay.
Thank you for sharing so much. That was cosmic. I'm glad you found that note today. That's beautiful.
Bye-bye.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Sometime I'd like to share a little humor about Meredith, too.
Oh, well, go ahead. Please do. We can wait.
Okay. This was, I think Meredith had a pretty good sense of humor. but he came from a very conservative background of Mennonites, I believe. Anyway, he was. We always had a summer picnic, and Irene would be in charge of kind of getting the food arranged and see who was going to bring what. And he was and he was announcing the picnic and that you needed to get arrangements for the food. And he says to find out what you should bring or what you're going to bring. Would you please talk to and he hesitated, and there was this long hesitation, and suddenly Irene says in a very loud whisper, Irene! he claimed he had name aphasia because he was forced to switch from left hand to right hand as a child. So, you know, take that for what it's worth.
Huh.
Interesting.
So does that mean he couldn't remember names very well?
No, he did not have a good memory. And I don't know what techniques he used to remember them, but he did tell me one time that he was supposed to open this building for this psychological group that he was chair of, and he said that he totally forgot, and those people waited there for a couple of hours for him to show up, and he never did. So,
oh, my.
But, you know, he was the typical absent-minded professor, I guess.
Yeah, well, we're all human somehow, isn't it? And isn't it funny when someone moves on, it's those kinds of things that we remember, and that's endearing. It's endearing to us,
yes.
You know? And I
yes.
love that.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to read this article that he wrote for the How I Found the Urantia Book publication that Square Circles and Saskia Rivori printed. He said, when I got involved in the Urantia movement in, or she says, when I got involved in the Urantia movement in 1977, oops, this is the wrong one. This is her story about her experience with him. Yes, I'll read that first. When I got involved in the Urantia movement in 1977, Dr. Meredith Springer was the president of the Urantia Brotherhood, and his printed pamphlets describing the book were mailed out to new readers by headquarters. So to me, he was a big name. As I never attended conferences, I did not become acquainted with him until the year 2000, when he contacted me with his How I Found the Urantia Book story for the revised book. We exchanged a few emails, but didn't meet until around 2006, when we visited him and Irene in their home in Fort Wayne, Indiana. During that visit, he mentioned that he had abridged the entire Urantia book, and I said if he sent it to me in Word format, I would turn it into a book for him. I heard no more from him and assumed it had just been polite conversation until sometime in 2007, when I received an email from Meredith with a large Word attachment and the message, "Here it is."
I love that.
Upon reading over Meredith's abridgment, Matthew and I found that in some cases, in our opinion, he had shortened a paper or a section almost too much, or meanings were changed. We realized we needed to collaborate with him paper by paper before committing his work to print. And this is what we did. For almost a year, we corresponded almost daily, starting with the foreword, studying each paper together section by section, and making suggestions to what Meredith had written. On his end, he also consulted with a fellow minister reader named Merlin Cox. In most cases, they agreed with our suggestions, and when Meredith insisted on keeping his original statements, we deferred to his judgment, as it was, after all, his book, not ours. During this time, Meredith's wife Irene became ill, and she passed away. So we suspended the work until he was ready to continue. I am sure that having this project to work on helped Meredith immensely in coping with her loss after so many years of partnership. In our emails, we also covered personal issues and got to know him on many levels, but mainly as a truly wonderful person with spiritual qualities, a man who practiced what he preached. We felt honored to have had the opportunity for such a private, in-depth study group with such a longtime student of the Revelation. Because Meredith was already in his early 90s at that time, we felt somewhat rushed to get his book out and produced a quick version for ICO8. And then I have reformatted the book, and it is now available in the Amazon Kindle store, as well as via Amazon's print-on-demand service. I assume that by now Meredith has arrived on the Mansion Worlds and is meeting loved ones and getting familiar with his surroundings. We look forward to seeing him again when our time comes. Saskia Rivori. What an experience that would have had to have been, to have an almost daily study group with him going all the way through the book in the last few years of his life.
I know.
Wow.
And you know something? That's something I didn't know, how heavily they collaborated on that book with him. And any proceeds for sales of that book go to Help Free Schools, the great project that's run by Urantia Book Readers to help educate young women in India. So it's a great project, and if you want to buy Meredith's book, proceeds, all the proceeds go to Help Free Schools. So.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, isn't that great?
Yeah.
And that was quite a monumental effort, really, to, I mean, I appreciated Saskia's story about that because it was something I didn't know, and how, and I also didn't realize that Meredith had done that book quite a while before. I thought he had just done it recently, like in the last 5 years, but it sounds like maybe he was working on it much earlier.
I think he had been working on it for a long time.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, when you read his story about how he found the Urantia book, he had been planning to write some books addressing some of the issues that the Urantia book answered for him, you know, long before he found the book. And I think that, you know, the way our angels work and the way our needs are responded to by the celestial powers that be, it makes sense that he would have been given an early copy of the book because it so addressed his personal need.
Yes, absolutely. We have another caller. Let's take another caller, Crystalline, before you read Meredith's story, How I Found the Urantia Book.
Please do.
Okay. Trying to get it through here. There we go. Area code 514, you're with us on The Cosmic Citizen.
Hi, everyone. This is Diane LeBrec. How are you doing?
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Diane.
Hi, Crystalline. I have just about 4 minutes to go. I actually feel very thankful you picked up the line because I have to go, but I just felt that for the benefit of your readers, it would be interesting to know, as you know, many readers know, we had the Jesus Retreat about 2 weeks ago. Right after the Jesus Retreat, I went to California to prepare for the United Urantia Family Festival in California next summer when we will celebrate Jesus' birthday. And when I was done, finished, Ron Craig, who was the dear friend of Vern Grimsley and who lives just the street next to Vern and Nancy, told me that Nancy was waiting to meet with me. And so I spent several hours of private time with her. And the reason for my calling is to let you know that she told me, after telling me the whole story of Vern from his birth to his passing on January 1st, I found out that the way Vern got the Urantia book was through Dr. Meredith Sprenger.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, and I thought it was very, very interesting because she told me how the process went. It was very fascinating, and when the Meredith presented the book to Vern, it was $30 at the time, and Vern didn't have the money. And Dr. Sprenger said, well, I'm lending it to you for the rest of the year. You go through it, and you either give it back to me or you buy it, but you'll see. And Nancy said Vern came up with the money and bought the book. And lo and behold, look at all the great speeches that Vern gave. And it was with the gentle help and the kind help of Meredith Sprenger. So wonderful. And one left us on January 1st, and Dr. Sprenger just left us this week. So it's interesting to see how life works. So they're probably both meeting or something like that. You know,
they're I'm sure. They're having a
yes.
good laugh.
Yes, exactly. But I thought it would be interesting for your listeners to know where what Dr. Sprenger had done among all the great, great work that he's done, that he offered. He got Vern Grimsley to find out about the Urantia book.
Yes,
you know,
indeed.
One of my,
yes.
my favorite quotes from the Urantia book is simply from paper 12, section 7, paragraph 11. The good effort of each man benefits all men. The error or evil of each man augments the tribulation of all men. As moves the part, so moves the whole. As the progress of the whole, so the progress of the part. The relative velocities of part and whole determine whether the part is retarded by the inertia of the whole or is carried forward by the momentum of the cosmic brotherhood. So if anybody was an example of good effort that benefited all men, Meredith Sprenger was a prime example of that.
Indeed.
How one life can touch so many others.
Yes.
We think we don't make a difference, but we do. And of course, Meredith.
You know, sometimes you meet people and you can attribute one word to them. It's almost like their name equals whatever. And when I met Meredith and his wife Irene, the first impression I had of him was Meredith equals goodness. It was just that kindness that was emanating out of him. He was living the book. He was radiating the teachings of the book and the teachings of Jesus. So he was a man of goodness and a man of godness, of good and love. So,
and of action.
They're probably celebrating up in heaven, you know, to have him on their side now.
And I love to think about that.
Indeed.
Yes.
There's
yes.
a party
Can
going on Mansion World 1.
Can I say goodbye to everyone? Because I'm on my way, but I just wanted to say this for the benefit of your readers, and thank you for the tribute you're doing. It's wonderful.
Well, thanks so
thank
much
you.
For sharing that little bit of information that we didn't
yes.
know that the book was a gift from Meredith to Vern, and that's nice. Thank you.
Yes, and look at the work that Vern did with it. So,
right.
Great man, think alike, and act alike.
There you go.
Okay, I love
all
you.
Right, Diane.
Okay, bye, Crystalline. Bye, Paula.
Bye-bye. Goodbye.
Bye, everyone.
We also were told that many of the letters that went back and forth between Dr. Sadler and Meredith had been donated to the Urantia Historical Society. So much of that information has been left to posterity and left in good hands.
And that can be found on the UB Urantia Book Historical Society's website. So I will get that address and post it for everybody.
And we also want our messages of condolences and of concern and comfort to go out to his daughters, Ruth and Grace. And we really appreciate them keeping us posted on Meredith's health over the last several months and letting us know about his very peaceful passing. We're really happy and relieved to know that his was a very gentle transition.
And wouldn't we all like to go that way?
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed.
So nobody deserved to make that kind of transition more than Meredith did, so I'm so glad that he did. So do you want
to
read his
Shall
I
Read
found?
How I Found the Urantia Book by Meredith Springer?
Yep. Here's
Meredith's story. My spiritual pilgrimage began at the age of 4 when I recall saying to myself, there is something about life that I do not understand, but I'm going to find out. During the years that followed, my life was shaped by a series of peak experiences that led me through academic majors in philosophy and theology, preparatory to ordination as a minister in the United Church of Christ. After years of developing sermons and papers, formulating my own spiritual experience that was centered in the religion of Jesus rather than the religion about Jesus, I realized that a new spiritual approach was needed in mainline Christian theology. I tentatively outlined a couple of books which needed to be written, and after some procrastination, I finally committed myself to the discipline of writing these books. Shortly after making this decision, the Urantia book was placed in my hands. In December of 1955, my wife Irene and I had stopped in to visit our friends Dr. and Mrs. Edward Bruiszewski. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. Dr. and Mrs. Edward Bruiszewski in South Bend, Indiana. In addition to his pastoral activities, Ed served as chairman of a theological commission in the Evangelical and Reformed Church, later united with the Congregational Christian denomination, to become the United Church of Christ. During the course of the visit, Ed picked up a big blue book and handed it to me, saying, Judge Louis Hammerschmidt, a member of his congregation, gave me this book. Some businessmen think this is a new Bible. I looked at the table of contents and read chapter headings like The Messenger Hosts of Space, written by one high in authority, and The Core of the Finality, authored by a divine counselor and one without name and number. As I handed the book back to Ed, we had a hearty laugh about businessmen thinking they had a new Bible. I assumed that that would be the last I would see of the book. At the time, I was vice president of the Indiana-Michigan Conference, and Judge Hammerschmidt was a layperson on our conference board. In January, I picked up the judge to attend a board meeting in Jackson, Michigan. During the trip, Hammerschmidt brought up the topic of spiritualism, which he did not accept, and was a bit surprised that I had made a study of it. After a pause, he turned to me and said, "Say, I've got a book that I would like to have you read and tell me what you think of it." I knew he was referring to the Urantia book, but to avoid hurting his feelings, I replied, "Okay, Judge, send it to me." When the book arrived, I set it aside, not wanting to waste my time reading what appeared to be either esoteric nonsense or some elaborate system of theosophy. Periodically, I would read a bit in it here and there, but I was not impressed. That summer, I took it along on vacation, but things didn't get boring enough for me to take a look at the book. In September, I realized I would be in a meeting with Hammerschmidt in October, and I had to read something and tell him what I thought about it. Looking over the table of contents, I saw that it had a section on the life and teachings of Jesus. I thought with my theological training, I could make short work of this section. As I started reading, I did not find what I expected to find, something like the Aquarian Gospel of Jesus the Christ by Levi, or the story of the early life. The story of the early life of Jesus was more believable than the accounts one finds in the apocryphal stories of the boyhood of Jesus. It was something that might reasonably have happened. As I proceeded to that aspect of the life of Jesus covered by the New Testament, I was even more impressed. Some of the traditional theological problems were handled by the events of the story in a way that made more sense than anything I had ever read. I found the Urantia book's narrative to be solidly rooted in the New Testament realities. There were times when I read with tears streaming down my face. When I finished reading the life and teachings of Jesus, I was theologically and spiritually inspired. Whoever had produced a life of Jesus of this quality, I thought, must have something significant to say in the rest of the book. Thus motivated, I started with the foreword and read the entire book. I discovered that the first three quarters of the book was even more amazing and profound than the life and teachings of Jesus. The teachings of the Urantia book resonated and harmonized with my experience and highest thinking. The substance of the two books I had planned to write was expressed far better here than I could have possibly done. If this is not an authentic picture of spiritual reality, I said to myself, it is the way it ought to be. Science, philosophy, and religion were integrated more effectively in the Urantia book than in any other philosophical or theological system known to me. There was no doubt in my mind that this was the most inspiring and authentic picture of spiritual reality available to humankind. I gave copies of the Urantia book to around a dozen of my colleagues, and all of them, except one, who admitted that he hadn't read it, confirmed my evaluation of its high quality. Our clergy group spent several years interviewing the people connected with the publication of the book and researching events associated with its origin. Since then, I have devoted myself to sharing the Urantia book with college students and the clergy of mainline Christianity. Wow, what a story.
Yeah. Brought tears to my eyes. Not unlike, you know, every story that we could all tell if we were hungry and searching for truth and Meredith loving Jesus the way he did and being able to read that story of Jesus. Wow, it's just the most invaluable testimony to the beauty, truth, and goodness in the Urantia book.
And I can personally just picture Meredith at age 4, and I'll bet he was kind of a little fella, just sort of standing there looking up at the sky and thinking, well, maybe with his hands on his hips, there's something about life that I do not understand, but I'm going to find out. Can
some
you picture
live,
that?
Some people live their whole lives and don't figure that out. Don't come to the conclusion that they can find out.
Right.
And, you know, so thanks for reading that, Crystalyn. And Saskia, if you're listening, thank you for sending that in for us to read. Thank you for your years of devoted service to people like Meredith Sprunger and to all of us. And thank you for creating that book, How I Found the Urantia Book.
Yeah, that has been such an inspiration to so many people.
Right.
So God bless you, Saskia. We love you.
And Matthew, too. Thanks for your efforts, you guys. Your endless, tireless research and devotion to the Urantia teachings. And thank
well
you,
done.
Meredith. Yeah, well done. And thanks to Meredith. And Mike and Dick, here we have with us on the air a father and son. A father who found the book because of the work of Meredith Sprunger and a son who benefits from it. You know, how touching is that? I mean, again, you know, the work of one man can touch so many lives. And I know you guys probably agree with me. I hold the Urantia book next to, in the same category as the birth of my children. Nothing that has ever happened to me in my life has affected me more in more positive and better ways for my own spiritual growth as a human being, as a child of God, as a spiritual being on this planet than the birth of my children and the Urantia book. I hold them absolutely equal to each other. I don't know where I would be without either one of those experiences.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
I can't even fathom my life without having this information. I can't even fathom it.
I think mine would be a lot more boring. and I do have to say that if we can continue any kind of efforts for the legacy that he's left behind, one of the things that he just presented to people just by being there was how normal he was. He was a normal guy. He didn't have any kind of esoteric leadings or any kind of strangeness around him. He was very comfortable to be around and very easy to talk to, very approachable. And if we could even, at the very least, just project that to people who are inquiring about this book, or even our critics and our people who seem to have a vendetta about the book, if we could just be the most approachable, lovable, normal people like Meredith was, then
Meredith
we've done
was
him
also
a
really balanced personality.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, yeah, and that those are some challenging shoes to fill sometimes, but. Those human characteristics we can portray and show that this is normal. This is normal spirit. And another thing I wanted to mention was if anyone who's listening doesn't know, he has done, through the Spiritual Fellowship Journal, which was published for many years, I don't know if you guys mentioned that earlier, but he has done an incredible amount of scholarly work around the Urantia book, and also he would always provide other books for anyone who wants to continue scholarly spiritual work.
he would always publish other books. And I know that some folks have archived his fellowship journals, and those will be available online and probably at the UB Historical website. But those are, every one of those, he had guest authors, and then he was the main editor, and he did an incredible, incredible amount of work with those. And the very, you can easily read them, too. He wrote them for the layman to be able to understand, as well as those who were studying seminary and other things. And he also made it open so that anyone who was interested in the Christian aspects of religion, they could read that and come away with something.
I've just posted both of those sites on the board, www.thespiritualfellowship.org and www.ubhistory.org. So those are two really great websites where you can find the writings of Dr. Meredith Sprunger, and also urantiabook.org is just loaded with Dr. Meredith Sprunger's writings. So he was, you know, I think everything you guys have said, his balance, his just approachable, sane kind of personality.
And his kindness, his incredible
yes.
kindness. I mean,
right.
he always made you feel like you were really important to him. And he was very respectful, even when he really vehemently disagreed with what people were saying or thinking.
Right.
He was he was very respectful in taking issue with them.
And fair.
And I've used him as a mentor in that way to try to respond, to attacks or to anger in a way that would, you know, reflect the lessons learned from Meredith.
Yeah.
When we, I think the movement has had a lot of challenges. And whenever there was a huge challenge with different things, I think it was a lot of folks would silently look his way and see if he was going to release some kind of a general opinion about different things. And he has written a lot of great articles about very, very difficult topics that the movement has faced over the years. And I encourage everyone to read the articles and just see how fairly he treats everyone and how he just made everyone feel comfortable and just provided that leadership. I encourage everyone to look. And there's articles on the fellowship website as well as the foundation website. So I encourage everyone to look at all four websites. I know I found articles from him in the fellowship archives. So he's got a lot of articles on the internet now.
Oh yeah, there's just
That's
a
great.
Wealth of information and great. And also, you know, his daughters have set up a site through the. There's an obituary site that's up right now where you can go and post a tribute to Meredith, and his daughters will see that. And I think that's really important that we let his family know that we how much we loved him. And I pointed out to a list that I'm on recently that in 2002 someone had mentioned the Urantia conference. You guys said you went to Canada in 2002 for a spiritual fellowship conference. We also the Urantia Book Fellowship also had an international conference in Estes Park in 2002, and we brought Meredith Sprunger and Irene, his wife, and Dwayne Faw, the General Dwayne Faw. And these two men were, if ever two men were destined to be colleagues and friends, it was Dwayne Faw and Meredith Sprunger. And they both were served on the original board of the Jesusonian Foundation. And we brought Dwayne Faw and Lucille Faw up on stage. So we brought the four of them up on stage. And Susan Ransbottom sang to them, "You Are the Wind Beneath My Wings."
And for the you know, speaking for the Urantia Brotherhood, they were, and for a long time member of the Urantia Brotherhood, they were like the wind beneath our wings. We looked up to them. We looked to them for guidance and for help. You know, they were our big brothers in the movement. They were our big Urantia brothers. And so, you know, I like to think about the four of them, four amazing Urantians, and all four of them true believers, dedicated to the service of the Brotherhood of Believers, dedicated to the teachings of the Urantia book, and very similar. You know, Meredith's testimony, as I said, was you know, so sincere and so credible because of who he was. Dwayne Faw was very similar to that, and also someone who had an amazing career in his own right. Those two men were just extraordinary. So that was special. I was glad that we did that for them. And we honored the four of them, and we said, we love you, and we gave them a beautiful memento of that occasion to say, you are a soldier of the circles. You are the wind beneath our wings.
It was a beautiful plaque and a beautiful ceremony.
It was. And they were touched. All four of them were touched, and I'm so glad we did it, you know, because when they're gone, it's too late to tell somebody how much you love them. And that's something that I learned from losing my own father when I was 20, which is what actually, you know, spurred me to find the Urantia book. I needed it because I missed my father so bad. And I realized the great lesson of losing that person, that first great loss of my life, was, gee, I don't have him here to tell him how much he means to me. And you never want to lose that opportunity.
But also on the same vein, isn't it wonderful that we know that we're not losing our relationship with him?
Yes, that's
and
it.
That relationships are eternal things. One of the most beautiful messages that we have in the Urantia book about life everlasting is the eternal nature of relationships, and that relationships are ends in and of themselves.
Right.
So we don't have to grieve the relationship permanently, because we know we will see him again.
That's right. And that is the good news. And that is what takes the fear away, isn't it? You don't have to be afraid to live, and you don't have to be afraid to die. It's all just life. And it goes on, and the good that Meredith did and the good that Meredith is continues on eternally in all of our good friends.
I have another story, if you want another story.
Yes, please.
Oh, please.
Okay.
We'd love stories.
When I was down in Florida, we had a study group down there, and during the Clayton crisis, some people in the study group were very, very upset. They were talking about selling houses, moving up to the mountains or something. And matter of fact, one of our members, who's now deceased, actually went out to Clayton and talked to Vern and came back and did a report, but it really didn't settle down. So I called Meredith, and I said, well, Meredith, what's going on here? And I don't remember exactly what he said, but it was very, you know, common sense, you know, don't get upset about this, you know, it's just Vern's thing, and don't, you know, everybody calm down. Nothing's going to happen, probably. So, you know, it just, he was very, you know, straightforward and saying, you know, he didn't think there's anything to it. And it kind of settled it for everybody. The whole group kind of accepted that, and we went on. So he was just a voice of reason in the middle of all this chaos.
Isn't Absolutely. That amazing? What a gift. And, you know, I wanted to share something, because when you read his story, Crystalline, you said, you know, it comes out that he turned a lot of colleagues, clergymen and women probably, onto the Urantia book, and how well it was received from him. And we know that he was a voice in the United Church of Christ and highly respected. And What I always found interesting, as a Urantia book reader in Boulder, Colorado, and we have a very active group in Boulder, as Crystal knows, and we like to worship together, and we come together to study regularly, we come together to worship regularly, we come together to socialize regularly, and we have had to go out and try to find, because we don't have our own church, and we don't even have our own space, really, to worship together. So we've had to go out and rent space from other religionists. Of all the spaces that we have found, and of all the religious groups that have been the most open and welcoming to us, the United Church of Christ has been the most open and welcoming. And I really believe that that is due in no small part to the work of Meredith Sprunger.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll never forget, I went to the United Church of Christ in Boulder, where we had a study group for years.
For several years.
Yeah,
one of the largest study groups we'd had up until then.
Right, we had like three groups going on at once in their annex, and we rented it, what, every Tuesday night or something for, well, probably 5 years. Every Friday night, that's right. And they asked for an introduction to the Urantia book, and the minister did, and so I came to give an introduction to the board of the church. And by the time I was done speaking, the minister said, "Now, Paula, what would you say that the revelation says about this?" And my heart just leapt, because that is such an affectionate term that we all use, the revelation. And I knew that he was probably a reader. And they more than welcomed the Urantia book to be in their library. And so it was just to me, and then we went on again to worship at another United Church of Christ church that was in a different area in Boulder. And again, they were totally welcoming to us, totally accepting of us. And when I read a lot of their beliefs, their current thinking, it's very open and accepting and tolerant of other religious ideas. And, you know, I just happen to think that Meredith had a big influence on that church. I can't help but think that. As prolific a writer as he was, and as actively engaged as he was in whatever he was involved with, I know he had an effect on the United Church of Christ.
Well, that's the church that I grew up, that my family grew up in, and if it hadn't been for that, my father would not have been doing a presentation at his church and would not have met him.
Yeah,
so it really is, it really has been fortuitous in my life.
Yeah. So thanks again, Meredith. And you know, I want to point out, we've got about 17 minutes left, folks, so if you want to call and share something with us about Meredith and your fond remembrance of him, the call-in number is 646-716-8158, and we'd love to hear from you. And I wish,
We also had some people write in to the Fellowship Society admin list over this last week, sharing their stories about him. And one of the stories that was shared was about their the first time that the Sprungers came to a Urantia conference, or maybe it was a meeting at 533 Diversey, and that they were all amazed to find that this young UCC minister had openly shared the Urantia book with his entire congregation and was openly giving sermons from the book from his pulpit. And they all thought that that was just so brave and so unprecedented.
And, you know, we got in, so many people on that list chimed in to say something about Meredith, and this was my favorite. I'd like to share my favorite because it comes from Claudia Ayers in Northern California. She says, "I'm guessing," this is what she's actually writing to his daughters, Meredith's daughters, she says to them, "I'm guessing your parents named you after the baby sister that Jesus raised." Meredith's daughter's name is Ruth. "I named my daughter after your father. There is hardly a UB reader who has not gained much by hearing your father speak. Reading things he has written or enjoying his company, especially those of us who knew him. He and your mother were much loved because of how much love they so freely distributed. I still stand in awe of their many accomplishments and unfailing humanity. My Meredith is one of the young adults who have embraced the UB teachings and is becoming active with the Youth and Young Adult Committee and our local society. Her good news is that she just this week has been admitted to the MS program in psychology, which will enable her to become an LMFT. I have not forgotten that your dad had a PhD in psychology. Your Meredith, your father, gave us all so much. How wonderful. He had nearly a century on this funny little planet. I am overjoyed that he is now able to see your mom again and shake things up on the Mansion Worlds. Lucky Mansion Worlds. The Meredith and Irene team is back together."
Here, here.
And then she shared something from their biography. So, you know, those are the kinds of things that all week we've been reading on this list, and we hope that, you know, other Yarancha lists have done a tribute to Meredith and to Irene, because it's just precious. It's a precious milestone. And I think both Dick and Mike have said, let's not forget the legacy, and let's, you know, let's move forward, because
as
this
if,
was an extraordinary
as if we
man.
Could forget the legacy.
No, and we won't let it happen. And I want to bring out right now that I have a pet project that I'm working on, and I, you know, oftentimes we talk about Dr. Sadler, and a lot has been written about Dr. Sadler, of course. You know, he was the main founder of, you know, fostering the Yarancha teachings and making sure they were available to the world. One of the main and principal people, but let's not forget that there are many heroes of the Yarancha movement, and many who contributed in many ways, tirelessly, stalwartly, serving. And I can name several: Julia Fenderson and Berkeley Elliott and Emma Christensen and Marion Rowley. People who anchored, you know, wherever they were, a study group or some aspect of the teachings that were always there. Meredith, you know, was stable and approachable, and you could find him. He was easy to find. But there's many heroes in the Yarancha movement like that. Dwayne Faw is another one. And people will always speak fondly of these heroes, and they say, wow, you know, he just changed my life. Or she did. Julia Fenderson, many will say, Julia, oh, wow, you know, she started a movement on the whole West Coast. And so I want to do a page with Heroes of the Yarancha Movement, and I want to highlight these amazing members of the Brotherhood of Believers. And so if any of you out there listening would like to do a tribute to any of these heroes, please send me your writings. I would love to create a page for each and every one of them, so that the legacy
project,
is not forgotten.
Paula.
Yeah, I don't want the legacy to be forgotten of the wonderful things that these human beings gave to us, because they really did lay down a foundation of love and service and courage. And so
I think that's a wonderful project, and I honor your inspiration for that. I think that's a great idea, and I think it's ironic, you know, that we're doing this tribute to Meredith, and Meredith himself was actually very much suspicious of any kind of tribute, or he has sort of had an aversion to exhibitionism. And he really was so humble, he really downplayed his accomplishments.
And I found a piece where he talked about that. He said, I'm a person of very ordinary abilities and gifts, yet my life has been blessed and rewarded in so many ways. Over the years, I've come to the conviction that I have a very able thought adjuster. Many times I've had the urge to bear testimony to God's guidance and acknowledge that whatever accomplishments I have achieved are largely the result of my adjuster's shepherding and undergirding, and not my human abilities. But my aversion to exhibition and the suspicion that disguised egocentric motives may be involved in this testimonial urge have always thwarted its actualization.
Now, what's that from, Crystalline?
Oh, he wrote a piece called On Giving a Testimony.
Huh.
And he starts out by saying, among his earliest memories, he says, I recall as a 4 or 5-year-old boy sitting in the missionary church in Woodburn, Indiana, listening to people give their testimonies of how God had blessed and helped them that week. Sometimes I was impressed by their sincerity and genuineness, but more often, even as a small boy, I was critical of their claims and wondered about their motivation. An aversion to exhibitionism has been a strong aspect of my personality. Later, he writes that, as an octogenarian, I've struggled in ascertaining the most effective avenues of service to which I am called. My direction has always been in the areas of nature, philosophy, theology, spiritual insight, and writing. At times, I have envied those whose calling was in a more tangible area, such as helping people with specific material or physical problems. Intellectually, I know that philosophers and writers contribute a valuable service, but emotionally, I sometimes wish for more immediate and tangible results of service. Mm. From an egocentric point of view, I would prefer to abandon this testimony project, but after much soul-searching, I feel constrained to witness to the guidance, support, and partnership of a wonderful thought adjuster and loving friend, mm-hmm. along with the Spirit of Truth and Holy Spirit. Those who have experienced this divine partnership know the truth of a mighty messenger statement. When man gives God all that he has, then does God make that man more than he is.
Mm. Wow, that's beautiful.
Meredith.
Anyway, he's written, you know, several pages that are on an odyssey of peak experiences, which to me is probably the most personally revealing of the writings he's put together. And I'd highly recommend anybody who's interested in that to look that up. I found it on the Urantia Book Fellowship website, which is on urantiabook.org in their archives.
And what was the title of that document, An Odyssey of Spiritual Experiences?
Well, it's an autobiographical sketch of Meredith Sprunger, but it's On Giving a Testimony and then Odyssey of Peak Experiences.
Oh, wow. And that was on urantiabook.org.
Yeah.
You were going to say something, Dick?
I was just going to say that Meredith once told me he didn't think that he'd accomplished any great big things in life, but that he had been an enabler of other people, especially in introducing them to the Urantia Book and encouraging them. That he thought that was just one of his major accomplishments.
Don't you think that is the earmark of a truly great spiritual leader? Somebody who...
Yes.
Help someone else find their own spirituality rather than try to implant themselves in that, you know, they empower other people. It's like that great quote from the Urantia Book that says, you know, that Jesus, the people he helped the most, he said the least. He just listened as they unburdened their hearts. And sometimes even just a smile from Jesus changed them and increased their ability to solve their difficulties. So,
well, and I think Meredith really did a lot to improve the materials for study. You know, some of his pamphlets are still the best that are available today.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he did an outline for the study of the life and teachings of Jesus that is really quite profound, where he looks at the setting of the seventh bestowal of Christ Michael and the background and preparation for the mission that must have taken place. It's quite impressive.
Yes.
If anyone wants to pull up that paper that Crystalline just wrote, you can actually type in that entire phrase, Odyssey of Peak Experiences, in a Google search, and it will come up right away. And then if anyone's interested in seeing just some of his papers, just type in Dr. Meredith Sprunger in a Google search, and a lot of his essays will come up.
Well, I have a question for you all then, because I've been looking for this essay for several months, and for some reason I can't seem to find it. But he wrote a paper called The Faith of Jesus several years ago, and I thought it was on the in the Fellowship archives, but couldn't find it recently. Anybody else familiar with that?
If you append that to his name in a Google search, it will come up.
Okay.
It's The Faith of Jesus, Discussion Questions for Urantia Book Paper 196. I'm wondering if that's the one that you're looking for.
No, it's actually not. That's what has come up for me. But this was actually a paper that he wrote that was just entitled The Faith of Jesus. And I had read it when I was much younger, when I was actually studying comparative religion, and I haven't been able to find it since then.
Well, that would be a good one. If any of our listeners can find that one, let us know, and we will post it.
And it could be that my memory is foggy. I'm reaching that stage in life where I'm losing a lot of memory, unfortunately. But so I might be wrong, and that might be why I can't find it. But if anybody does know, please let me. Please contact me.
And also, you know, we are down to our last 3 minutes. And I want to thank everybody who called and everybody on the board who participated in this remembrance of Meredith and this tribute to Meredith Sprunger. And I don't know if Mike or Dick, either one of you would like to say a prayer for us for Meredith's journey. Are either one of you open to that?
Well, Paula, I think you're much better at spontaneity of prayer. I would rather hear something from you.
I was afraid you'd say that. No, I wasn't. I'm happy to say a prayer for Meredith, and we can end the show with that if you like. And I want to thank you both for calling in. It was really so nice to hear from both of you. And thank you.
And considering your own loss, it's really special that you took time out of your day to share with us today.
Yes,
thank you.
Thank you. And we will say a prayer for our dear friends who have gone over to the other side, and we'll end the show with that. Thanks to our listeners. Thanks, Crystalline, as always, for your stalwart and loving service. Dear Father in Heaven, at the center of all things, at the center of every being on this planet, at the center of every heart listening to this broadcast today. Thank you, Father. Thank you. Thank you for the loving servants you bring to us, the tireless toilers that you bring upon the earth that serve us so faithfully and so well. Thank you, Father, for Meredith J. Sprunger. What a kind and noble man. What a wonderful man you brought into our midst. What a true brother in the brotherhood of believers that you gave to us, Father. Thank you for all the wonderful humans that spend their days in service to humanity to help and uplift everybody. so that we might find the light and the peace and the purpose of our lives and the satisfaction of our lives, as Jesus said. Thank you, Jesus, for your truth, the truth that you bring to us in the Urantia book. Thank you for the truth that you pour out every day, daily in our lives. And Master, see Meredith on his way. Let him know how much we love him and miss him, and that we have faith that we'll see him again on a brighter shore, on another shore, in another day. Thank you for endless life and for giving us that example of endless life and for proving to us that life doesn't end. Thank you for all of these blessings. Even so, may it be. Amen.
Amen.
Amen. And I'd like to add a personal prayer onto that, and that is to thank you, Father, Brother Michael. Thank you for giving us the incomparable life, ministry, and humanity of Meredith J. Sprunger. Thank you that he was with us so early in the reception of the Fifth Epical Revelation, and that he was able to do so much to turn so many of us on to this profound book. And thank you for the wonderful example of he and his wife as a truly devoted, loving couple amongst us, our mentors and our examples of loving ministry in action. Thank you. Amen.
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 Well, until next time, thanks for calling, you guys.
You're welcome. Take care.
Thanks.
Bye
again.
Bye-bye.
Bye for now.
You're probably off the air now, but they're going to have a memorial service in May for Meredith, but I don't think the date has been set.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put a note.
We heard from Ruth that they were postponing it until she recovered from her severe bronchitis.
Okay, you saw the message then. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your work with Cosmic Citizens here.
And, it's our pleasure. Thanks so much for calling in.
We'll
I know you were really busy today, so it really means a lot.
Well, this was important, so thank you for the opportunity.
Our pleasure. God bless you both.
Shalom.
Shalom.
Bye-bye.
Bye. And thank you, Paula, for coming up with this inspired suggestion at the last minute.
Well, it must have been meant to be, huh?
It's funny. I was just thinking about it earlier in the week that I was wishing we didn't have the date already booked, because it would have been a really appropriate time to do a memorial, or a tribute, I should say, to Meredith. So kudos to you, dear.
Well, it's angel work. See, that's
indeed
what they're good at.
Indeed.
Love you, my dear.
And I love you, too.
Have
a
great
weekend.
Will do.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Cosmic Citizen, a radio program focused primarily on the study and discussion of the Urantia Book and its teachings. The Urantia Book is a religious text that claims to be written by angels and other superhuman personalities. If you are a Urantia Book reader or a spiritual seeker looking for new truth, we hope and pray you have been nourished and edified by our ministry. Please remember that the views expressed on this program do not reflect the official views and opinions of any Urantia organizations. There is no official interpretation of the Urantia Book. So all opinions expressed on this program exclusively reflect the personal biases of the hosts, guests, and callers who participate in these discussions. And remember, only a brave person is willing honestly to admit and fearlessly to face what a sincere and logical mind discovers.